Are you ready for a change? Be it physical, mental, or emotional change, you've already got what it takes to make that happen. Your host for the upcoming program, the Matt Newton Power Hour, has trained in martial arts over the course of several decades. Time and time again, his training methods have saved or extended the careers of dozens of NFL, NBA, and Major League Baseball stars. Matt Newton has authored two highly acclaimed books, A Path to Power and The D Factor. The Matt Newton Power Hour starts now. Here's Matt.
Let's do a live radio broadcast. Everybody. Hi, gang. I'm Mac Newton. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Wow. Christmas is my favorite time of the year. It is. It just is. I hope you feel the same way. This is the Power Hour, ladies and gentlemen. And we have a great show on tap for you today. I know I do. I'm stoked. I am charged up. We're live in beautiful downtown Phoenix, Arizona. Tuesday afternoon. It is now exactly 5 o'clock. Straight up. December 21st. Yeah, we're broadcasting today on Tuesday. You guys, unfortunately, won't be able to hear it till tomorrow, Wednesday, but that's how it's going to work for a little bit. But that's okay. It is right now 68, partly cloudy degrees. Very cold for us here in the valley, but those of you around the world, oh man, I want to say hello to, of course, the fabulous Natasha in the house. What you doing, baby?
Hello, I'm in the house.
She's checking in.
Oh, I'm checking in. That's what they said earlier. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yeah, well, we could get, maybe we'll get her to sing a Christmas song for you later on. And of course, the magic man himself, the Zaxter.
Happy holidays, everyone. Excited for the show today. A lot of good music.
We have a lot of great Christmas music on tap for you guys today. And lots of good stuff. I got an early segment on the University of Connecticut's women basketball team going tonight for a record 89th straight victory. Wow. What an achievement. What an achievement. Our main topic today is going to be more on goal setting. We're going to now get into step number 4. We're going to review quickly the first 3 and get into step number 4 as you guys are getting into it. And I know you are. I mean, it seems like everywhere I go, I'm running into someone who's telling me how much they love the Power Hour. Really. Just, and emails that I get. And hey, but do me a favor, gang. Tell your friends. To listen in. If you like it, I'm sure they will too. And we've got a world famous guest today. Our call-in guest is going to be PGA Tour veteran Ted Purdy. You'll be listening to Ted in about 15 minutes as we find out what makes him tick. And well, all right here on the Power Hour, gang. That's it. As I said, my name is Mac Newton, and we do this thing here every single Tuesday or Wednesday now. It's in a state of flux. We're doing it today on Tuesday. Well, hopefully we'll be back live on Wednesdays, but right now we'll be up online ready for you guys on Wednesday. Okay. There you just, I think we're listening to, gosh, who was Who was that giving us some great songs there? You know, we had,
we had a wonderful Patty Austin.
Yeah, Patty Austin was bringing us in on that. And we're going to just bring things in just randomly for you on today's show. So I may not have, but we've featured most of these guests. Not Mr. Charlie Brown upcoming, but we feature most of them. Okay, here we go. Next on our agenda, as always, shout outs. We've got to have our shout outs and do those quickly. Let the people who are always sending me emails know that we are thinking about them. And of course, we're going to start off with the Bevzilla and Peter. Hey, Peter, how you doing, man? How you doing? We can't wait to see you back in the house. You and the Bevzilla. Gotta have you back in the house. People are asking and hoping you're doing well. Andy out in Spain. Al down in South FLA. And Larry and Kimmy. Veronica G in the Philippines. She just communicates with me everywhere. Jeff out in Chandler selling Mercedes-Benzes, you know. And, of course, DZ up in Michigan. Barry teaching Taekwondo and doing Taekwondo in Chicago. I sent him out a special message last week. Nick and all the guys in Denver, you guys missed a huge snowstorm just a couple days ago. And I guess California is getting some of, I guess we're getting what California got. California got, I guess, a couple days ago. So anyway, welcome to the show. Got our shout outs in there. And this is our Christmas show. We just like to feature a lot of different Christmas music, you know, and talk about stuff, have a little fun, just have a Christmas party. Right, Natasha? Isn't that way we do
right.
it? Just have a Christmas party.
We're having a party in here.
Right here. We got the cinnamon candles going over there.
That gives me a headache.
Oh, man. In fact, speaking of a headache, every time I hear this song by Charlie Brown, I always think of someone who's had one too many Christmas toddies. Oh, my. So what are you doing for Christmas, gang? What's going on with you? Are you spending it with your family? Christmas seems to be a very family-oriented holiday, and sometimes people are really stressed at Christmas time because, you know, maybe they don't have family or their family's, you know, in another part of the country or they're passed on, and they feel alone. You know, my advice to you is, you know what? Don't resist it. Don't resist it. Got to remember this. What resists persists. Don't fight it. Don't fight it. Get involved with it. Go hang out with your friends. Go to Christmas parties. Get involved in the whole Christmas thing. You know, I really don't like cold weather, but when I lived up in Chicago, man, I went out ice skating. I bought a snowmobile. I got out there and took advantage of it so it didn't seem to overwhelm me. And a lot of people find themselves fighting the holidays, and my advice to them is don't do it. Okay? Don't do it. Embrace it. Get out there in it. You know, maybe mom and dad or the kids aren't here, but there's someone that you can embrace. There's someone that you can talk to and have a party with or exchange gifts with or just get in your car and drive around and appreciate the Christmas lights. So, anyway.
I was just saying I think I'd like to see you in a pair of ice skates, sir.
Can't you see that? Extremely graceful.
Absolutely.
In fact, as a matter of fact, I always teach a few of the LA Kings hockey. And I used to get on right over here on Thomas and in the ice rink over there, because I had to learn, I had to feel what their bodies felt. So you had to get on the ice with them. Oh, they used to mess with me out there. And I'll tell you something, hitting that puck when you're skating on the ice at about, I don't know how fast you're going, trying to hit that puck with that stick is not the easiest thing in the world to do. The very first time I did it, ended up on the seat of my pants. You got to learn the technique. Well, yeah, I can ice skate, you know. Don't think just because I'm from Jamaica, I can't ice skate. We got bobsledders down there, man.
Cool Runnings, man.
That's right. Cool Runnings, a classic. All right. Okay. You know what? My early topic today is going to be on the... I am absolutely just shocked. I mean, I'm absolutely shocked at the fact that the response that people are having to this incredible achievement by the women's basketball team at the University of Connecticut. If you haven't heard, tonight, Tuesday night, they are going after their 89th consecutive victory, spanning a period of almost 3 years. I mean, the juniors on that team have never lost a game. I mean, think of the commitment that that requires on the part of the coaching staff, the administration, the players, the playing together, the hours. Not to say that other teams don't do it, but they've got an 88-game winning streak to back up their commitment to it. And not only have they beaten a lot of teams, but they've beaten a lot of teams by 20 and 30 points. And they've beaten ranked teams. They've not just played the the also-rans, you know. They've played everyone. And what has surprised me, this is what's shocked me, gang, is that some people, mostly men, are saying that this achievement is not as legitimate as the achievement that they, as the record they are attempting to break. The record that's currently held by the UCLA basketball team back in the 70s under the tutelage of the legendary late John Wooden. I was a tremendous fan of John Wooden, of his teaching style and what he's doing. And this does not in any way minimize his status or his legendary appeal or the accomplishments of UCLA or Coach Wooden. This just means that this particular, this team are setting a standard of their own. And people are saying, well, you can't compare this winning streak with that of UCLA. That was a men's team. What do you mean? What do you mean it's a men's team? That's somehow saying that the accomplishments of these girls at UConn are not legitimate? Are you serious? Okay, then, I could say then that the team that John Wooden had that won all those games, they couldn't compete with a team today. What we're talking about here is basketball. Basketball being played at the highest level at that time, against the best competition that can be brought up against them, male or female. And they are winning, and they're doing it in spectacular fashion. And I'm just absolutely... I'm disgusted by the attitudes. But you know what I think it's? This isn't really, in the minds of those people, this isn't really about basketball. It's not about winning and losing. It's about people who are insecure in their own rights and feel that somehow that men, how can these women break the record held by a men's team? Oh, man, I don't get it. You heard some of these same comments when the women's soccer team won the gold medal a few years ago. Some of these, that this is not a true achievement. Not like if it would be if it were the men's team. I don't get that. I don't get it. Well, you know what? My hat is off to the University of Connecticut's women's basketball team. They deserve an applause. And I'll tell you right now, I will be on the front line cheering for them to win tonight. Not only win tonight, but to go on and set a new level, a new standard that other men's and women's team can aspire to. And you know what? That's not the end of the story, gang. That's not the end of the story, because between 2001 and 2003, the University of Connecticut's women's basketball team won 70 straight. Won 70 straight. So this is their second major winning streak in a very short time. I think it's amazing. I think it's absolutely amazing and deserves our appreciation and our thanks for the standard of excellence that they're setting, because sports does matter. So congratulations to the UConn women's basketball team. Congratulations to Coach Gino Murrieta, I think is his name. Well, apologies if I mispronounced his name, but obviously he's a great coach and is doing something that's never been done before. But again, it does not diminish the achievements of the legendary coach John Wooden or the legendary UCLA teams that he taught, including players like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I can't think of all the players on that team, even though I grew up with them. I watched them play, and I was a great fan. Of course, Kareem was called Lou Alcindor back in those days. And no, not at all. Doesn't diminish their achievements. Now it's time to look to a new standard. And I think that this sets a tremendous example for women all over the world to follow. And another reason why women should be encouraged to be in sport, because they can achieve at any level compared to now or at any point in the past. So go, lady. I think they're the Cougar, the University of Connecticut Wildcats.
Huskies.
Go, you know, you're the sports fan on this show. You are the man. So go, Lady Huskies. There you go. All right, we were listening to Jonathan Butler in the background after. My name is Mac Newton. This is the Power Hour. And this is our Christmas show. This is our Christmas show for 2010. And I hope you guys are all having a tremendous Christmas planned. Natasha and I are again going to have our deep fried turkey. Are you looking forward to that, darling?
Oh, I am. Huh? I was excited last night.
You know, just hearing about that, right?
Yeah, just hearing about it makes you feel good.
If you've not had a, have you ever had a deep fried turkey?
I've been waiting, sir. I still haven't yet.
You still haven't had that. Maybe we meant to bring you.
I should save him a piece.
Okay.
What piece are you going to save him? Are you going to save him the drumstick? Are you going to do that, huh?
Sure.
Yeah, right. You're going to
give
him one of your drums? Yeah, right. Sure you will. She says that now, but when it comes down to chewing time, you're going to be in trouble.
It's Christmas. It's time to give. I'll give him my
drum. I'm sure you got to have it right at the time. You know, it's probably not the same.
Oh, no. It's the same. I mean, it's juicy. It's ready to go. Okay. All right, gang, you guys stay right where you are. It's exactly 15 minutes past the hour, it's 15 minutes past the hour, and we're listening to Christmas music, and we're having a little Christmas party here. Right on the other side of our break, we're going to be talking to a Phoenix resident and PGA Tour professional, Ted Purdy. Ted Purdy, who was born here in Phoenix, and graduated from Brophy College Prep right here in Phoenix in 1992. And in fact, he's even in the University of Arizona Sports Hall of Fame. We'll tell you more about Ted Purdy right after this break, a pause, and more Power Hour, and later in the show, more on goal setting coming up. My name is Mac Newton, the fabulous Natasha sitting right there, who has promised, and you guys heard her, to give Zach one of her turkey drumsticks for Christmas. Okay. And Zach, I know, is going to leave it for. We're going to go to break listening to Vanessa Williams saying, "Do you hear what I hear?" We'll be right back.
Way up in the sky, little lamb, do you see what I see? A star dancing in the night with a tail as big as a kite. With a tail as big.
Hey, gang, welcome back. I'm Mac Newton. This is the Power Hour. A beautiful Tuesday afternoon in downtown Phoenix, Arizona. A very chilly, damp 69 degrees. I know, for those of you in the colder climes, it sounds pretty good. People think we don't have seasons down here in the valley, but trust me, this is winter. This is cold. Zach came in with a big leather coat on today, all bundled up. Natasha had, I thought she had two or three scarves on, but only one, huh?
Only one, but it's big. It's huge.
And she's
keeps me warm.
Stylish as always. As I promised you, we have a special guest, Mr. Ted Purdy. We'll be chatting with him in just a moment. And you know what? Just in the theme of Christmas, we've got Vanessa Williams and Bobby Caldwell talking about, hey, it's cold outside. Okay. Yeah, I hope you guys will have a chance to watch Connecticut go after their 89th win tonight. It could be almost as exciting as when Arizona State University absolutely crushed U of A in football this year. I'm sure I'll hear more about that since Mr. Purdy graduated from the University of Arizona. Welcome back, gang, and this is the Power Hour. It's good to have you tune in because I know you had a choice to do that. You know, Ted, as I mentioned earlier, was born right here in Phoenix. He's like, he's homegrown talent. Graduated from Brophy College Prep, I think it was 1992. That was the year that I finished up. Bo Jackson and I worked together for a year. We started in 1991. I talked to Bo yesterday, and he reminded me it'll be 20 years next year when Bo Jackson and I sort of changed the world in terms of what you could do with an artificial hip. Well, Ted graduated from Brophy in 1992, and he went on to play golf at the University of Arizona. He was a finance major there, and he was inducted into the Sports Hall of Fame in 2005. Now, I remember this event. I remember where he won the EDS Byron Nelson Championship in 2005. I mean, because Ted had started working out with me a year or so before that. And, you know, to say that Ted's a nice guy doesn't begin to kind of, you know, tell you really who Ted is. You know, there's nice guys, and then there's Ted Purdy. If you don't like Ted Purdy, I don't trust you. Something's wrong with you. He's got the Ted Purdy Foundation, which donates to the St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital, a Stepping Stone, and Arnold Palmer's Children's Hospital. And that's just the beginning of his philanthropic endeavors here in the Valley. It's legendary. And he and his wife, Arlene, they have two children, Sammy and Andy. So, Ted Purdy, welcome to the Power Hour.
I'm honored to be a part of it, Matt. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, thanks for agreeing to come on. Ted, I, you know, it's really something having someone like yourself on the show, because rarely does the average person get a chance to hear someone speak candidly and off the cuff. And that's really the only way that Ted talks. I remember watching the interview you had with when you won the Byron Nelson Championship. And Byron Nelson has since passed on. But I remember watching you talk to him. And I remember the look on your face. You looked like you were just thrilled to be sitting there talking to him, not just because you won the tournament. Can you explain what that feeling was like?
Yeah, I mean, I was the last champion before Byron died at age 93, I think, or 94. But, you know, he's just the ultimate sportsman, the ultimate gentleman, you know, great family man, but... I think everybody in all sport, he transcended golf, and he just was larger than life. The guy was a special guy, and to have been able to meet him and win his tournament and spend time with him. I was invited in December. I won the tournament in May, and in December he invited me to his house in Fort Worth, and I flew out, and I spoke for his charity, at a little event, and I spent the whole day with him. And I asked him, he had gotten into woodworking, you know, he's 90 years old, and I said, you know, I'd be honored to, can I buy a piece of your woodworking? Just, I'd like to collect it. And about 2 months later, I get a box in the mail, and he'd crafted me a wooden clock, and on the bottom of the wooden clock, it's engraved, made by Byron Nelson. So, you know, I had a great friendship, even though it wasn't very long. He was just a special guy.
Now, Ted, did he routinely invite other players out to his house or other winners of his tournament out to his house for dinner?
I can't speak for that. I don't know.
Okay. Well, the only reason I was asking is because I think he was probably just as taken with you, because as I remember watching this interview, I think there was just an air of mutual respect and admiration going on there.
Yeah, I don't know. He ended up, he was a great writer. He'd write notes to, he was a great note writer, and he wrote me 3 or 4 notes, and you know, I've saved every one of them, and we corresponded through the mail. Obviously, he wasn't on the internet ever, and
like me, huh?
It's just a special guy. Yeah, no, it was a very unique opportunity that was presented to me.
Hey, let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back to elementary school. Let's go back to your childhood. When did you first, or how did you first, discover the game of golf?
Well, I grew up, you know, it's a unique twist of fate how I became where I did. My older brother, my family's from a little small town in Iowa, Keokuk, Iowa, and my older brother, he's 6 years older than I am, had chronic asthma, and he was in the hospital constantly, and so my parents moved to Phoenix to cure his asthma, and then I was born here in Phoenix on the 10th hole at Moon Valley Country Club. And when I, growing up, I was right at the golf course, so I could see the clubhouse. They have pictures of me in diapers playing golf, just because we lived on the golf course at Moon Valley Country Club. And I think I knew young that being a professional golfer was what I was going to be doing. And I remember distinctly the 1982 U.S. Open when Tom Watson chipped in to beat Jack Nicklaus at Pebble Beach. And I think I was 8 years old.
Yeah, I was going to say you're about eight or nine right then.
Eight or nine, and I said, that's what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to win the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach someday. That's going to happen. So
I can remember when I was a kid, I think I was about 12 years old, and I remember kicking a heavy bag, and I remember the bag knocked me over, and I remember getting up and swinging it and timing it perfectly. I was just a little thing. I'm talking about a heavy, like 120-pound bag, and I hit that bag, and it just stopped dead still. And I remember that was the moment I thought, I'm going to be a martial artist and a Taekwondo instructor. I was about 12 years old. That moment. So you knew when you were about 8 or 9 years old, huh?
Yeah, no, the goal was definitely clear. The image was definitely clear in my mind at a young age. And I remember if I was asked, I was a pretty dominant junior player in the state of Arizona and a fairly good college player. And every time I was asked, you know, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm going to be on the PGA Tour. And even my fellow competitors and fellow teammates at U of A, they'd say, Ted, do you see yourself on tour? And I go, of course. You know, it was never a, I just had a clear picture of where I was going to be, and that's what manifested.
Well, you know, that's what we talk about so much in goal setting, the topic we're talking about right now here on the Power Hour. How did you, I mean, you know, to be a professional golfer, so many different things are necessary. And, you know, I mean, the game is made up of little minute things. How do you keep yourself up and positive when things don't go your way? I mean, what do you do? What is your particular routine that you go through to keep yourself positive, to keep yourself focused on playing your best and getting ready to win?
Well, you know, and I guess that's the trick. I played golf with a Cy Young pitcher last week, and he said that there are a lot of guys in the world that can throw at 95. Mm-hmm. I mean, he goes, there's probably 1,000 guys in the world that can throw at 95. And he goes, but I'm one of the handful that make $10 million a year. And, so that's the trick. I mean, the talent is one thing, and the ability to throw a ball or hit a golf ball, it becomes an attitude, a mental part of the game. I mean, attitude is everything, Mac. And as you've taught me over the years, when I'm positive, when I'm excited, when I'm into what I'm doing, I play great. I think the tricks for me to stay positive is the first trick was to be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And I claim that's my number one when I'm healthy and when I'm 175 pounds and feeling good about myself health-wise, my attitude is tremendous. And the reason that is because I'm disciplined. I'm disciplined when I'm eating. I'm disciplined with my sleep. I'm disciplined, you know, to be at 175 pounds and in shape, I've got to be disciplined to be there.
Yeah.
And then when I'm disciplined, my whole attitude changes, my whole golf game changes, evolves, and I do better. And I came to you, first time I came to you, I think it was 1998, and I hadn't made the tour yet, and I was struggling and was bouncing around the world. I was playing the Asian Tour, and I came to you in the summer of 1998, like a month. I spent a month with you before I went to tour school, and I went to tour school, went, got all the way through, got my tour card. I was on tour, but and you were instrumental in getting me to that, to the tour. And then once I got to the tour, I didn't, you know, I was on the road and traveling a lot, and the priorities were, you know, not in line, and I didn't go see you that year, and I didn't return back to see you until 2002, I think. And in 2001, I had made 30. I think in 2002, I had made $30,000 gross, and I'd probably spent $200,000 trying to play the game. So I was negative $170,000 for the year.
It's amazing how that works, isn't it?
Yeah, and in 2003, I came back and saw you, and I went on the nationwide tour, and I got my card back. In 2004, I made $1.7 million and finished top 30 on the money list. In 2005, I won. I was, continued with you and was working out with Mac Newton, and I made $2.5 million or something like that effect, and was top 20 on the money list. And I mean, the rest is history. So when I'm disciplined, when I'm doing what Mac Newton teaches me, I do very well. And I can't express my gratitude enough for you, man.
So you know, so what you're saying to me, Ted, is that even with knowing at an early age, feeling destined that you're going to be on the PGA Tour, that you're going to be a professional golfer, even with the talent. I mean, you've mentioned to me yourself, and I've heard from other professional golfers, that you have one of the best natural swings in the world on tour. I mean, I've heard, and you can tell me if this is true or not, so reportedly Tiger Woods said he wished he had your swing.
Oh, yeah, he's told me that a number of times. Yep.
So even with all of that going
on, a lot of people have said it.
So even with that, you're still telling me that attitude is as important as all of that? Is that what you're saying?
I think it's more important than that.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, I couldn't agree more. You know, Ted, there's so many questions I have for you that I want to, you know, kind of let people be inspired by all the things that you've done. You've won on every tour you've been on. You've won on the Asian Tour. You won on the Nationwide Tour. You won on the PGA Tour. And so you know that you are a winner, and you've always been a winner. So now your goals are turning to other avenues beyond just winning. I mean, it's you want to be a more consistent winner. Question: have you ever had, or what was the biggest challenge that you faced since you became a professional golfer that could have sidetracked or derailed your career? And what did you do to overcome it?
Well, it's especially starting out, there are a lot of, I could have got derailed in 2002 when I made $30,000 and spent $200,000.
That's exactly the kind of thing I'm talking about.
Yeah, I mean, financially, you go, well, maybe I can't do this. And I, it's those wake-up calls that, for me, that have, you know, when I was against the wall, it's either go get a job or pursue my dream, and that's when, you know, for some reason I get pushed into your studio.
So how'd you overcome it? What'd you do? How'd you... I mean, what you're talking about here is pretty serious. You're talking about you need $200,000 a year to survive on a PGA Tour. You're making $30,000. I mean, how then do you go to winning, you know, 2.5 a year or so later? How did you overcome that? How did you? because there are people, not necessarily on the PGA Tour, Ted, that are dealing with exactly the same thing. You're just more
visible. This is a good exercise for me, too, because I don't think I've really reflected on what I did prior to this conversation, but I know what I did. It's hard to explain, but I set the goal, and I trusted that it would happen. Mm-hmm. And then things and circumstances appeared and came to me. Like, I was on the driving range, and it was like a flash of light went off in my head that I remembered my swing as a kid, and I remembered how, you know, I was in rhythm, and my body was, and my arms and my club and everything was working together, and I wasn't, you know, the lower body wasn't going in front of the upper body, and I was in sync and circular. You know, and then I had that pop into my head. I remembered how I swung as a kid, and I just let that go. And then, another flash of another person came into my life was you. You know, a circumstance that I was out of shape, I was negative, I was, I didn't have my goals in line with, my discipline, my priorities in line with my goals, and you helped me through that. You got me fit and positive, and taught me how to set goals and understand my goal setting situation.
It's hard
Everything.
For me.
I think that's exactly what I did. Is I set the goal, and all these circumstances and all this, you know, my flashes of brilliance with my golf swing just came. You know, it just came to me.
You know, it's hard for me to imagine you and you saying, you know, negative thinking. And I can imagine anyone can get out of shape. But if you know Ted Purdy and you talk to him, you're going to hear him say this phrase often. You're going to hear him say, I'm grateful. I'm grateful, Mac. Sometimes in the middle of class, he'll be huffing and puffing down the floor, sweat running across his brow, dripping off his nose and chin, can barely stand up. And I say, Ted, what are you feeling? He says, I'm grateful, Mac. I'm grateful. So where does that come from? Where does this gratefulness come from? And what are you referring to when you say you're grateful?
Well, we're talking about attitude. Attitude's everything. And probably the most powerful attitude we can have is an attitude of gratitude. Mm-hmm. Either you taught me this or somebody did. You can't have anything new in your life if you're not grateful for what you have.
But you're relentless with it, Ted. And there's a difference. A lot of people can put on a facade, a cover.
Yeah.
But see, and I mean, you bring this out under the most dire of circumstances. When I have you under intense pressure, and if you've not been in my class, you don't understand the kind of pressure that I would put Ted under. And I mean, at the time when, and then I'll wait till he's, and then I'll bring out the hardest parts. I'm trying to temper him. I'm trying to prepare him for those moments that he'll find on the golf course where everything is conspiring to make him quit. I'm trying to build that will into him when he says, I put up with Mac Newton. I put up with that class. I can make this happen. And I'll say, how do you feel right now? You know what comes out of his mouth? I'm grateful, Mac. I'm grateful. That's amazing. I will tell you, that several times you've said that. When it has inspired me, it's inspired me. What's the most memorable? I know I got to let you go. I'm going over. I'm taking more time than I told you I would take. And
I'm enjoying this. We can talk all night.
Well, we're going to get on to the rest of the show, but you know, I want to know about the most memorable round you can remember. I mean, with the most memorable player, was it Tiger Woods? Was it playing with what did you get a chance to play around with Byron Nelson? Did you play with Jack Nicklaus? What was the most memorable round? Was it a recovery shot? Was it coming from behind to win? What's the most memorable round of golf that you can remember? Was it playing with your father when you were 15? What was the most memorable round for you?
Well, I you know, the number one, I've got a couple flash to my head, but the number one was winning the Byron Nelson the final day. I was a couple shots back, and you and I had been working with, I don't know if you even know this, but I had one of your tapes from the 43 days with Mac Newton, and it was the tape about letting go. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I had that in my CD player, and I had that going all week. And the gist of the CD was, you know, visualize. I think you gave the example of the people practicing free throws.
Yeah,
there was a group that just visualized shooting free throws, yeah, and a group that just shot three free throws, yeah, and then the other group shot free throws and visualized.
Mm-hmm.
And the group that just visualized shooting more free throws had a better percentage than the other two. So I went out that week, and I said, you know what, I'm just going to visualize each shot. And then, you know, and as I visualized the shots going through the week, I ended up, you know, a shot or two from the lead. But on Sunday, the other part of that was I had to let go. I had to let go of the desire to win, because I'd been in the situation to win a couple times, two or three times prior to that, and fallen short. You know, I had those failures. I lost in a playoff to Stewart Cink, and I lost on the 72nd hole to Jonathan Bird, and I kind of threw up on myself in Las Vegas, and you know, so I had these things where had I not wanted it so bad, that I probably would have four or five wins under my belt. But at the time, I wanted to win so bad, and I had come so close, and I just couldn't figure out how to. And you said to me, just let it go, and every time I'd hit a shot, time the thought in my head was, you know, I'm going to win this golf tournament, I said, okay, I've got to let that go. I've got to let that thought go, and I've just got to hit this shot. Well, I hit 18 greens that round. I didn't make a bogey. It was a bogey-free round, and I shot 65 and won by two shots over Seanan O'Hare and Vijay Singh.
I remember it well.
And I was like, that was an amazing, you know, an amazing learning experience for me. And
I remember teaching you that, Ted. I remember saying that sometimes it's like in business, you have to be able to let go of the big deal in order to get it.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can make yourself so tense that you destroy your perspective and not allow yourself to let it happen. Whether it's happiness, a relationship, a great golf shot, you know, a perfect sidekick, or the perfect sales call. This was Ted Purdy, one of my favorite people in the world, not just because he's a great golfer, because of the person that he is. He's one of these people who has the ability to look at the world and see beyond themselves. He's so willing to share, as you have been with your time. Look forward to seeing you in class again, my friend. And maybe
we're all in this world together, Mac.
Isn't that so true? Thanks for being my guest, Ted Purdy, ladies and gentlemen. And hopefully you'll get a chance to see him again on the PGA Tour in the winner's circle. Thanks for being my guest, Ted.
I'm grateful for you. Thanks, Mac.
You're welcome. Bye-bye now.
May your mood
Hey, gang, listen, thank you so much for tuning in. We've got more of the Power Hour coming your way right after these messages, and we're listening to Nancy Wilson talking about singing about the Christmas waltz. And I'm still thinking about getting the fabulous Natasha to sing a Christmas song for you. We'll be right back.
Hi everyone, this is Zach Geist, also known as the Magic Man. The Power Hour is brought to you by Newton Fitness Online, the same high conditioning and training that Mac Newton provides in his beautiful Central Phoenix, Arizona location is now available to you online, 24 hours a day. It couldn't be easier. Just log on to MacNewton.com and go to Mac's gym. Yep, his gym is online now. Just go and select your fitness level and go to class. Okay, don't put it off. Go to MacNewton.com now, check it out, and get in the best shape of your life.
Have yourself a merry. Hey, gang, welcome back. That's the voice. Let your heart be light. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Ted Purdy. I sure did. Our troubles will be out. It wasn't an interesting listening to Ted talk about out of sight. That even discussing this was giving him a different perspective. Have yourself on how he should look at his wins. Christmas. I predict Ted Purdy is going to win many more PGA tournaments. From now on, our troubles. At least I hope he does. You like to see good things happen to good people. And he's one of the good people. We're listening to the late Lou Rawls. Happy golden days. Accentuate the goodness of our Christmas. Faithful friends who are dear to us. His voice is so unique. It wasn't as unique. I got a chance to meet him several times. Isn't it the song I just learned how to play on guitar, Natasha? Have
I
yourself?
Think so. Yeah, you just started.
Yeah, I just started to learn how to play that on guitar. Yeah, I did. Hey, are you going to sing a Christmas song for us, Natasha?
I wish I could. I don't know the words.
One day we're going to have to, you know, Natasha's voice is amazing. I mean, she's only like 5'4", 5'5". Boy, she opens her mouth and this building of sound just comes out, you know. It's just like, huge voice. One day we'll do that. Maybe when we have her as our guest on. From now on, you know, we'll have to do that. You know? Hey, welcome back, gang. I'm Mac Newton. This is Tuesday afternoon, a beautiful Tuesday afternoon, a little overcast. Had a few showers earlier, but that never lasts long in Phoenix. They're predicting a few more showers tomorrow, and then it's going to warm up and clear up. But, of course, Natasha did wash her truck on Sunday. Or was it Monday?
It was Sunday. And it was spotless.
Spotless. But I told her, feel good because it rained on a clean car.
How can it make me feel good? It was perfect car, and now I have to wash it again.
Well, it barely shows.
Sure.
The Christmas season, don't you love it? You got your Christmas tree up yet, Zach? Huh?
I've actually been waiting to get like a real one. I realize it's getting to almost so late now.
Hey man, you're almost too late for that.
I know.
You got to go to Home Depot or Walgreens and pick you up one of those green ones. Like
I'm
I have
a good deal on a used one. A
used one? Maybe someone will go out of town.
Oh yeah.
Like Christmas with cranks.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Christmas with the cranks. Find someone going to spend their Christmas in Flagstaff and go and borrow their tree. Well, we have one in the lobby you can borrow on Christmas Eve. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. That's Lou Rawls. Okay. I'm Mac Newton. You can tell we're having fun today. A great interview with Ted Purdy, and hearing, listening to how he got started. Pretty spectacular stuff, gang. You know, as you can tell from listening to our new commercials, that our online workouts are going to be a reality in just a matter of days now. Another example of goal setting. So, okay. Let's get back to that, okay? Natasha's got her notebook out. And she was saying to me last week's class, there was a possibility she might miss today's broadcast. And she went, oh, I don't want to miss the Christmas show and it's goal setting. And, she's serious about this. And I know you are too. The things that we talk about really help us out. I mean, even as I talked about earlier, when I was talking about the opinions of so many, and most of these negative opinions are coming from men. It's like it's a gender issue. It's like some men are intimidated by women who are able to perform at high levels, women who are powerful, women who are able to do things as well or better than they can. These are men who are not comfortable in their own skin. And as you learn about goal setting and you yourself become more fulfilled, you're not intimidated of others. You have no need to try and dominate them, and nor do you shrink before them. In other words, you're just more secure. You're just more secure. And all the people that I know that tell me about what they get from the Power Hour are expressing that in one way or another. You listen to Ted Purdy talking about what he gets from listening to the talks associated with our class. Because our class is not just about, getting fit and ripped and rock, hard rock abs. And yeah, all that stuff comes. That's the easy part. But being healthy is a matter of managing stress and getting a balance between your emotional and spiritual and the physical being, an ability to look at the world and see beyond yourself, a way of integrating your thoughts and your desires and wishes into the world so it becomes a win-win-win situation, not just one party wins. And that's what goal setting is all about. It's about balance. Okay, let's review very quickly, very quickly. Number one, step in goal setting, develop desire, intense burning desire. This is the motivational force, okay? And motivation requires, give me the root of the word motivation. That would be?
Motive.
You are correct. Motive. You are correct. And another word for motive would be what?
Your goal.
Yes, what goal? A reason. For the goal. A motive. That's a reason. The more reasons you have, the better you are. If you and Isaac want the same goal, you have 20 reasons. I only have 3. Who's going to get it first?
I got a bigger desire.
You got
myself.
It. You got more reasons. You got more. So desire is the motivation. Desire is the motive. You got to figure out how many ways. That's why number four is to make a list of all the ways that you're going to benefit from having this goal. All the reasons. Again, we're building number one. We're building number one by listing out between 12 and 20 benefits. This is what a salesman does when they're working. They give you all the benefits of their product for you. They make you feel you can't live without it. You can't live without this product. You must have it. They're giving you all the benefits, all the reasons. That's what good salesmen are able to do. And if you're going to be an effective goal setter, you're going to always build on your desire. So step number one, desire, intense burning desire. Number two was what? Remember that one, Natasha? Number two was, I always say in my class, if you got to look at your notebook, that only means you've got a real smart notebook, okay? You want to put this in your head so you're thinking it. So you're thinking it and writing it down. Number two is belief. And you got to believe two things. You got to believe, number one, that you deserve having this goal. You deserve it. You deserve the best life has to offer. You deserve this goal. Number two, you've got to believe that you've got what it takes to make this go happen. You've got the creativity, you've got the resources, you've got the time, you've got the energy, you've got what it takes to make it happen. Believe. Belief creates the actual fact. Number three, what was number three? We should remember that one. Write it down. You must write it down, because if you're not going to write it down, what is it? It is only a wish. You're saying, I wish I could be more like you. I wish I could lose this weight. I wish I could finish my education. I wish I could be more successful. I wish I could earn more money. But the end of the sentence is, but I know I can't. It's like a goal with no energy behind it. It's like a car with no engine. How frustrating is that? Everything, the car has wheels, a steering wheel, seats, it's got a paint job, it's got rims on it, it's got everything but no engine. You know the old saying, if it looks like a duck, if it sounds like a duck, if it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. Well, maybe that's true when you're talking about ducks, but not in this case. It looked like a car, it smelled like a car, it rolled like a car, but it wasn't a car, it didn't have an engine. And goals are the same way. They're not all the same. They've got to be written down. You have got to write that goal down. You must write it down. You know, when people say to me, because I know that by writing it down, that's one of the most powerful methods for implanting this goal into your mind. But a lot of people say, I don't have to write my goal down because I know what it is. You know what they're telling me? They're telling me that they don't think their goals are attainable. They don't think they can reach it. Because you know what they're doing, Zach? They're selecting goals that they think are possible for them, not the ones that they really want. Most people don't go after goals they really want. They go after the ones they think they can have. They go after the goals they think they're worthy of. Remember that story I told you last week about Pat Howard? How most guys wouldn't even ask her to dance because they were afraid to. They're going to go ask a girl to dance that they think is permissible for them. People go after jobs the same way. They do everything the same way. They set their goals the same way. They limit their goals to what they think they can have. Okay? Zach, are you following me now on this? Okay. Now, so bottom line is they don't think that writing them down do any good. They attempt to protect themselves from being disappointed. So they don't write them down. And by doing so, they assure themselves of being disappointed, and they assure themselves of underachievement on their journeys all through life. When you discipline yourself to write your goals down, to write down this major definite purpose, the very act of doing it overrides your fear. Overrides your inertia. It overrides the failure mechanism, and it turns your success on, that success mechanism. It turns it on to full power, okay? That's what it does. So write your goal down. Okay, number four, make a list of all the ways that you are going to benefit from achieving this goal. You know what? When you write this list of all the ways, those, Zach, Natasha, those are a list of whys. That's a list of all the whys. A list of whys. And you know what? I know that people will do give you almost any what if you can give them a good enough why. See, because when you write down all those benefits, all those are nothing but whys. Oh, that's why I set this goal. Another reason, that's why I set this goal. And every time you do that, you get more and more fired up, more and more excited, more and more enthusiastic. Until nothing can stop you. All of these big reasons for achieving your major definite purpose, you will have an intensity of purpose that will border on obsession. It will make you irresistible to success. Nothing will be able to stop you. You will become a force of nature. When you look at certain achievers, you look at guys like Robert Kiyosaki, Donald Trump, Bill Gates. These are long, I'm not talking about flash in the pan. We're talking about major achievers over long periods of time. These people you see as a force of nature, nothing can stop them, whatever they touch. it's going to be successful. Am I correct, Zach? Huh? Am I right on that one?
Absolutely.
Right. So you watch them, whatever they invest in, you want to do. You trust their opinion more than you do your own. You know why? They're a force of nature. But you know what? Everything they touch doesn't win. It's just that they don't let them stop. They don't let that stuff stop them. They just reload and go right back with another goal. Everyone talks about the number of number one sellers that Robert Kiyosaki has written. Very people know that he's had more books that have sold absolutely nothing than he's had number one sellers. Rubbermaid comes out with a new product. You know the Rubbermaid company that makes like dish drainers and rubber products for your kitchen and stuff like that? They come out with a new product every week, a brand new one. Every week. Of all those new products they bring out every week, only six of them will ever reach the market. Over the course of a year, six. But they bring a new one every week. It's a matter of numbers. It's a numbers game. And they expect success in every last one of them. They're a force of nature. They're a force of nature, and they can't be stopped. You're going to let all these reasons move you forward. Move you forward. You got to want something badly. I've told this story many times because I retell it to myself almost every day. It's a story about Socrates. And you know Socrates, the great Greek philosopher and teacher and scholar and gymnast. Well, one day after delivering a speech in town, a young man walked up to Socrates and he said, "I'd like to gain more wisdom. Can you help me?" Well, Socrates was very supportive. He says, "Of course." He says, "If you want it badly enough." He says, "Come with me." And he walked him down through town, down to the edge of the Aegean Sea. And he walked him out into water about 4 or 5 feet deep, right up to the man's shoulders. Being a gymnast and very strong, Socrates reached up, grabbed him by the neck, and just took him right underneath the water. Right underneath the water, and held him there. Until he could tell by the movements of the man, he had just about all he could take. And he let him up, and he was going, you know, just gasping for air. And when he finally could breathe, Socrates looked at him calmly and said, "When you were under the water, what did you think about mostly?" He says, "I can only think about one thing. I can only think about getting some air." He says, "Well, when you want wisdom as badly as you wanted that air, then you'll get it." It's all about desire. So all of those benefits is to build your desire. All of that belief is to build your desire. All of that writing it down is to build your desire and implant it deeply in your brain. So number one remains the most important element. Okay? One of your jobs is to keep your desire burning brightly by continually thinking of all your benefits. So you must write them down. Write down your goal, and then write down at least 12 to 20 benefits that you're going to experience when you achieve that goal. And I want to tell you something right now. If you don't do that part, you are simply not serious about achieving the goal. It's something you would like to happen, but you don't want it badly enough to actually go after it. All right. Okay. As I said earlier to Zach, if you only have one or two, you know, reasons for achieving your goal, you'll have a moderate level of motivation. But you can be easily discouraged, especially when the going gets rough. And of course, you know it's going to get rough. It always does. If you have 20 or 30 reasons for achieving your goal, you'll be irresistible. You'll be a force of nature. Nothing will discourage you or dissuade you from keeping on. You'll be like the Bill Gates and the Robert Kiyosakis and the Donald Trumps of life. Nothing can stop them. No matter, no person, no situation can stop them from their goals. They are relentless. I mean, they've begun again, even barely before a failure is even recognized. Okay, we're up to reason number four, gang. I hope you're with me. Next week, between Christmas and New Year's, we'll be working on step five. Now, don't you let me forget now, Natasha. Don't forget, step five we're going on to next week. Step five, All right. You know what? This song, I saved it for last. The original Temptations. This Christmas. Well, this may not be the original group, but it's right there with them. The musicality, the singing, the arrangements of the Temptation back in the day. It's amazing. And the level of musicianship and the voice, trouble a bit, does that. I mean, just everything about this song says, Merry Christmas, folks. Oh, I love it. Hey, gang, this has been my Christmas show. I'm Mac Newton. The fabulous Natasha is always with us here. Zach Geist, the magic man behind the glass. And I'm grateful for all of them, as Ted Purdy would say. I hope you enjoyed that, and keep a lookout, because he'll be heading back out on the tour any day soon. As I always say, I want to say thanks to all those who've helped me in my journey. Because you know, folks, you may like to think you did, but you didn't do this by yourself. And you're not going to get there by yourself. Okay? You're not going to get there alone. It's going to take the help of many. Yes, it is. I want to thank Bob Adlon. Suns are struggling right now, but they got some new players. Maybe they'll be, you know, you never know. Pat McMahon, my mentor. JC, my co-host for life. And JB, I miss you, brother. If I had to do it over again, I'd be more insistent when it comes to getting you in shape. I ain't kidding. I really would be. And of course, the fabulous Natasha and the magic man. Hey, gang, be good to yourselves, especially during this holiday time, and set up a whole year of thankfulness and gratefulness. Make the saying very true, every day is Christmas and every night is New Year's Eve. All right? And you know what being true to yourself means? It means that your words and your behaviors match. I'm Mac Newton. Merry Christmas. 3, 2, 1. Peace. The Mac Daddy is out. Shake the hand.